it's like your mom told you, you know, nothing worthwhile ever comes easy, you know, and
said shame on you. I got a thing to say or two. I've been digging in the dirt for days. I've made a humble home for bones to lay. So if you got something to say.
So this is kind of a road trip episode. I am on my way to Prescott Valley to pick up Leslie Earl Lyman, a past guest on both my show and the Sky Daddy open mic show from the Birdcage. And Les is in the process of putting some ideas together to host a show periodically through the Mile High Show where he will talk the music business with folks and some club owners, some musicians, some showrunners, some other folks involved in the Arizona music scene and entertainment scene. Tonight, we're going to be going out to the Verde area, Cottonwood area, to listen and watch Brandon Decker perform at the main stage in Cottonwood. We're going to head out there, maybe chat a little bit on the road out and have a little fun. So stick around, be a fly on the wall or I guess on the window of the Mile High Show Mobile Studios, that maroon-colored van that cruises around. Hope you enjoy it. Might be fun. I hope we don't get in trouble. I've never been to Les's house, so this will be interesting. If you haven't seen Les, you would... my idea of his house is a log cabin next to a creek bed and surrounded by several acres of trees in the mountains somewhere. That's what I picture, but here we are in a suburban neighborhood. I think maybe he gave me the wrong address. I don't know, because I don't see any log cabins in sight. So we made it up to Cottonwood. We're at the main stage right now watching Brandon Decker and his crew set up. They'll be playing here. They did a live record recording in Phoenix last night. And turned out to be about a 20-some hour day for him. He said he started at like 5 in the morning, packing his gear up here in the Verde, and then heading down and wrapping up at like 3 this morning. So I don't know, whatever that is. That's too long. So he is extremely drained today. They're setting up on stage. Les himself was not feeling too hot when I picked him up at what was not a log cabin in the woods, but a house in Prescott Valley, Arizona. A very nice house on a very nice suburban lane. And he's getting a little bronchitis, so you'll hear that in his voice. He's going to jump in on mic with Brandon and myself to talk music, to talk the music industry, to talk the Verde music scene, and everything else we can fit in a few minutes before Brandon takes stage. So it'll be a short one tonight. We're going to hopefully get some great photos of them performing and stick a burger in my face. I am going to have, I've ordered already, the pastrami and cheese. No, not a pastrami and cheese sandwich. It's a pastrami and cheese burger. It's a cheeseburger topped with pastrami. I'm looking forward to that. This is my first little trip to the main stage. It's a great little spot. It's right near old town Cottonwood. I gotta set the mic down for a second. Yeah, it's a neat spot. There's some pool tables, a full bar, full menu with some good pub food, it looks like. We'll get a chance to sample that in a few. And a great looking stage and dance floor. There is It's well lit. It's just a neat spot. Come check it out. The main stage. I'll have links to them, both Facebook and the website. But they get a lot of art, music, live performance art. They do all kind of stuff here. So we're gonna have a fun time sitting here tonight, and I am definitely gonna be back here. Les knows the ownership out here. He's played here many a time. So I will probably be making more and more trips out here with the non-serial killer, Leslie Earl Lyman. If you don't know why I keep saying that about Les, go back and pull the Leslie Earl Lyman episode of the Mile High Show from milehighshow.com. I sat with him at Brick and Bones in Prescott, and we had met several times before that. He had been present for a couple of the episodes that I recorded. One of them was Sky Conwell and some others. But he is a mountain man-looking guy. Long hair, long beard. And you would probably think maybe metal music, something. I don't know. He's got that wild man look to him. But he is a singer-songwriter and has some of the most haunting lyrics that you could hear coming from this guy. But in the course of our interview, I inadvertently butchered his name several times. I called him James Earl Ray, James Earl Jones. I called him lots of things reminiscent of the serial killer three-name moniker. So it is stuck, and in my mind, he will always be the non-serial killer musician. So we're just waiting for our burgers, checking out the scene at the main stage, and stick around. Listen to me eat. So what are you eating? Let's do a food review.
Well, I got the pub burger this evening because I hadn't had it yet. It comes on a pretzel bun.
And you got a whole salad attached to it. I like that.
Which is like, well, you know, it makes you feel better about, like, you know, the cholesterol bullet you just, like, you know, shot yourself with.
I should have some kind of what's the cholesterol medicine? What's one of the ones that's really popular?
Simvastatin, like the statin class.
That should come with what I'm eating. I got the burger along with... Looks good. I'm just getting into it. Mine's a heavy cheese on a burger topped with pastrami. I love.
Yes, it's like it's a hamburger with another form of beef as a condiment on top of it.
It's like that
I
old
like that idea.
On the old Andy Griffith Show, they asked Opie what he wanted for lunch. He wanted a apple pie sandwich. A piece of pie between two pieces of pie.
I like that idea.
Oh, Les is in on the interview, too.
He's running the thing.
I just walked right over. Here we are. This is cool.
You talk while I listen.
This is a Zoom. I have a Zoom myself.
Yeah, these are all right. I wish I knew how to use it.
Okay.
How are you? Nice to see you.
So tell me, I'm going to yank these off in just a minute here. I just want to make sure we're actually recording stuff.
We're just... sound checking.
We're good. Tell me about the glamorous life of a rock star that you experienced yesterday. I heard a little bit about what you were saying. When did you start yesterday morning?
So I was away a lot last year, and I was on the road 18 weeks, and I realized, as much as I love what I'm doing, that I don't like being away from my son. And so I have my son some weeks three nights and some weeks four. So it's 50-50.
How old's your son?
He's four.
Oh, nice.
And
what a great age.
Yeah, God, I love him so much. Yeah. He's just my buddy. So I'm just not willing to give up time with him. So we had this show that I'll tell you a little more about maybe. That was in Phoenix that we were doing with this radio station. And I love the DJ and his show. And he's a big supporter of us. So he likes us to be on at 8. But I didn't want to miss my night with my son. So what I did was arranged. Every story I tell is about 15 minutes too long for the punchline. So in order to pull off yesterday, I had to get up at 5, which a lot of people do. You know, it's like firefighters and nurses and ER doctors are so much tougher, and soldiers, you know, like, I got to get over this pity. But I got up at 5, and I literally was full throttle basically till about 2:30 in the morning when our show got done.
I don't envy you, but I'm not going to give you a medal.
Yeah, yeah, so okay. Yeah. I don't know if I saved any lives.
The healing power of music and entertainment.
Yeah, that
how's
only
that?
Goes so far. That's not the same thing as a tourniquet for yeah. a bleeding man.
The healing power, though. So what, you were doing a live show for radio? Were you recording at the
well,
same time?
The radio show was and is involved with this. We were doing a live album recording that night at a music venue down there called Last Exit Live.
Yeah.
So I was on the show in the morning to talk with the
guy. So you were on the morning show at 8 o'clock.
Correct.
Okay, I thought you meant 8 o'clock last night. So you had to be down there for the 8 o'clock radio show.
Correct, yeah, there.
Yeah. So we'll try and throw in some morning zoo.
This isn't even that big of a deal.
Jump in with some morning zoo questions here.
Yeah,
Les.
Yeah, yeah. Start making funny noises.
No.
I'm eating potato chips. I think that's going to come across in the recording.
We don't care. Now, you, how many weeks were you on last year on the road?
18.
And you're based out of the Verde. Is this
Sedona.
Your home base, Sedona?
Yeah.
How long have you been playing? Or is this lifelong?
No, I'm a late.
I hate that question.
I'm a late bloomer.
Yeah. Like, well, what do you mean? You know?
Yeah. Playing with myself?
No. Well, did you come from a musical background, family?
I grew up. My mom loved Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young.
Yeah.
And I grew up liking to sing harmonies.
Yeah.
And I sang a lot, but I didn't start writing songs really until I was covering songs at about 20.
Yeah.
Really liked playing guitar and songs. And then I got off drugs when I was 25, and I just switched the obsession to songwriting. Yeah. I was like processing it and
was that partly therapy for you to try yourself a little bit?
Yeah, I really realized lately I got to slow it down.
Yeah.
And one of the realizations as I started slowing it down, I started feeling crazy. And I realized that in these 10, 11 years since I quit drugs, I've just been doing a very similar addictive thing. You know, it's been my art and my career. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to necessarily equate the two, but I feel like what I'm really working on, I still need to learn how to be balanced and get quiet and take care of.
Yeah, disconnect from the creative process.
I just did it, kind of. I feel a little better.
It's really hard.
Hiking saved my life over the last year.
For people with addictive personality, and I throw myself in that mix, I needed something when I kicked what I was doing. I needed to really fill it with, and I turned to work. Photography's my trade.
Right.
And I locked myself at the time, for people that don't know what they are, dark rooms. You turn off the lights and you would process film. Kids don't even know what that is anymore.
Is that where you do Photoshop?
But I would lock myself in for days at a time. I just replaced one addiction with another. Now, granted, you know, one is probably not as harmful as the other, but becoming a workaholic as opposed to any other aholic that you can throw in there was just as devastating to, at the time, my new marriage. This is 20 years ago. And it was like, you know, I don't see anymore. You're just working. You've just replaced one with the other. So, I still battle with
you
that.
You know,
man.
I read this great article from this guy, Andrew W.K., and he's sort of, I don't even know what. He's a very successful musician and artist.
He started out as a comedian, and then he started becoming he's a Renaissance guy.
Right.
Raconteur.
He's actually become like sort of a libertarian kind of firebrand.
When I got back from this first tour we did last year for Patsy, I was just, it wasn't, I was just.
Great CD, by the way.
Thank you.
I love it.
I was just drained, and I was distraught, and Anyway, I came across this article. I highly recommend any person read this that isn't fully self-actualized. Andrew W.K. writes this piece weekly or something for the Village Voice, and it's about the article you could search is success as a musician. But one of the things he says in there is any idea of success that takes away from any other idea or any other area of your life is not success. So in this analogy, this scenario, like your, you know, your success at work at the expense of a marriage is not success, right?
Right.
And I'm really looking at my life a lot as like, this thing's got to be holistic, you know, like my health and my spirit and my stress levels and my relationships with others and my, you know, they are all just as important, if not more, than my musical advancement.
That was probably my problem, because I did it a lot. I wasn't successful, though. It was,
right.
I still had no talent.
Yeah, I relate.
But no, if there's no balance, you're just gonna fall down another rabbit hole, whether it be, you know, whether it's a bottle in your hand, a straw up your nose, or a guitar in your hand.
Right.
A rabbit hole's a rabbit hole. How do you get out of it?
I think we're here to be happy. And I think that comes with just focus on being the best we can in the present moment. Is your arm okay?
Probably. Why?
You've got a wound. It's not actively bleeding. It looks like.
I'll have to check my armrest in the van. Know. What were you doing?
I don't know what happened there.
Shrapnel.
He's getting ready for a bar fight later.
Oh yeah.
Like, so, talk a little bit your involvement, and I've seen some of the clips you put up for the documentary. What's it entitled?
Play the Documentary.
Play. What's your involvement in that? Is it your project?
No. Are you? No. Very exciting. My friend Maddie Steinkamp, God bless him, one of my great friends, and what do you call him? confidants.
Yeah.
Maddie was a musician that turned into a record label, that turned into a videographer. He made a lot of my music videos. He started getting into editing and cameras, and then out of passion, he knows so many musicians, and he just started filming these people playing music. And then it turned into Play the Documentary, which is a documentary about the, I say it's about the transcendent power of, for anyone, of picking up and playing an instrument, but also about the lack of funding in the United States for music education, which is actually changing right now.
Yeah.
But at the time of the shooting and the editing, it was not. So we made this documentary, and how I came into involvement with it was Maddie, much to my surprise and joy and pleasure, he hit me up and said, would you help me write this? I've got all this footage and I don't know what to do with it.
I had to make a story.
So we spent a week up at my house last summer and just puzzled over and, you know, bulletin boards, war room type stuff, and came up with what it was and put it together. And you know, it's been accepted into some film festivals, and we're going to push it as hard as we can.
The clips I've seen are just beautifully photographed.
He's a great cinematographer. He's got a great eye and a great vision. But the story is beautiful. I mean, there's just the different people's lives it gets into. Is just amazing. Like, it's definitely
amazing.
Make you weep kind
amazing.
Of stuff.
Like,
yeah.
Where can we see?
So we'll be probably screening it up with Sedona Film Festival people. We missed the submission to that. Its premiere is going to be at the Phoenix Film Festival here in April.
Right on.
And we're waiting for word with L.A., Portland, Chicago, and Brooklyn.
Nice.
So
beautiful clips. Just the very small clips I've seen just blew me away.
Yeah.
Is that the guy that's been doing your photography?
He does a lot of my work.
That explains.
He did my Patsy music video. He did my ODB music video. We're making a new album called Snake River Blues, and we just began a documentary that making for the Snake River Blues. It's going to be a full length documentary film.
Footage from the road and
it's
from the tour,
just
or just
fully
a little bit of everything
from last night's live album recording through the New York residency that we're going to do in September. You know, going on the road, shows, recording the album, hanging out in Sedona, Spirit Room.
Nice.
And we're also working on two other documentaries in pre-production right now, too.
So you got a couple irons in the fire there.
This is a new thing, and I'm really grateful because I think it's going to help me be a little less crazy with the music.
Now, that's what you're talking about really sets you apart from a lot of the participants, a lot of the players in the local music scene. A lot of these guys are guys and groups and girls, extreme level of talent in this area, but they're in this area. They stay here. There's not as many that are out touring nationwide like you are and getting the recognition that you are. Try and capitalize a little bit. Talk a little bit about the local scene here in the Verde, in Prescott, and how... How did you make the decision to go full-fledged like you are? Because there's some talent. There's extremely talented folks that are content with playing the local venues, dropping down into Phoenix every once in a while, whether that's because of other commitments or the level that they're willing to give into it or circumstances. And you and some others have really broke out of that mold and are... hitting the road to a bigger extent. How did you make that decision?
I agree with you. I feel like between Sedona, Cottonwood, Jerome, Prescott, Flagstaff, there are amazing talents. Talent, I mean, just, you know. Oh, God.
I mean, you walk into...
It's mind-boggling if you stop to think about it.
You walk into some open mics, and there's headliners
up there. It's like that. You know, I mean, there's little mountain towns in Colorado, and there's...
Oh, yeah.
Here's what I know. I don't know what speaks to other people, and I don't know what success looks... It's like the Andrew WK thing. So, I don't know that there... Yeah, I was talking yesterday. I don't know that there's a value... You know, is Taylor Swift's music more valuable than Nick Cave's music because she sells vastly more tickets?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I don't think we can put a value on that. So I know what I do. I had moved up here from Phoenix, and it felt at the time like I'm sacrificing my music career. You know, whatever
leaving,
that was.
Leaving the metro
and
area.
Like,
to
I
some...
had nothing going on, and you might say I don't now. You know, like, I started when I finally left. Les used to mix the band that I had in Prescott.
Oh, I keep forgetting to bring that, man. I have a disc of that.
I don't even want to hear it.
It's awesome.
It's terrible. So what happened was. This guy named Val, who I worked with at a resort up here, was, you know, I got tired of going down there, and it wasn't happening. I wasn't, you know, and I was just like, I started making my first record.
Yeah.
And
what year are we talking about?
This is 2009, and I didn't know.
Do you need to get with these guys?
Can you give me one second?
Oh,
yeah, go ahead.
This. It's all
Cool. Right. Do you need to cut, or are you all right? Okay.
They got to load in. All right, tell me when to go.
Well, you're on. I just let it run.
Okay.
And then I'll yank out silences.
All right, cool. So 2009, we make the record, and I was bartending mostly. And it was just like, what am I going to do? And 2009 was also this revolutionary year where I kind of had broken out of depression and feeling, instead of disempowered, I felt empowered.
Now, where does 2009 drop into your recovery?
I mean, I'd been off of drugs basically since 2005.
Okay, so you're 4 years
right,
in.
Yeah, but I don't feel like it's not like I'm not going to meetings or anything.
No,
like,
yeah,
you know?
But yeah. No.
And I was bartending at this place in Sedona, and these kids came through that were from like Ohio or something. They were on tour. And I was just so intrigued by the notion of, you know, like,
hitting the road with music.
And I asked him a bunch of questions, and I was like, well, I guess this is what I'll do with this record. And then I went on, I did it. I did this, like, stupid tour, and we weren't very good. And we toured up to Seattle and back. And then I got back, and I was like, well, I'm going to make a better record. I'm going to put together a better band.
Keep that nice and tight.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right here?
No, yeah, you got to eat them.
Okay.
Cheap.
So I was like, let's just put something, let's make a better record and do better. You know, I made a better record, and then I put together a better group, and we went and toured for like 5 months. And then I had a kid, and then I wanted to make another record, and I made another record, and you know, it's just, for me, what just happened was it's like, the further I got, the more I see areas to improve.
Yeah.
Whether it was on the recording or on the band live performance, I'm still this way. How to tour, how to make better shows happen, and how to get the word out more. And so I've just continued obsessively trying to do better.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what you're supposed to do.
Right.
And like a lot of people in my experience, you know, look at it, you know, and there's something for me, you know, I was raising kids, you know, and I really, you know, I'm, and you know how time intense it is, you know, but for other people, I just look at it and it scares them. What has always impressed me about you is you went, you know, well, I'm not doing anything else, might as well be touring. And, you know, that's what you did. And you worked on making it better. And every year it got a little better. And
right.
And now you're going to New York soon, I hear, and you're going to, like, do some shows and release an album in New York City. And I'll guarantee you when you moved up here from Phoenix, that, like, was, like, not even on your radar.
Yeah.
But, dude, like, nobody has worked harder on the touring aspect than you. And, like, I'm sure you get asked this that question all the time. Not just what made you do it, but how do you do it? And you have to, like, do it. You go up, you wake up in the morning, you have a cup of coffee or whatever you do, and you go to work.
So
that's what you've been doing.
There's this movie called Be Here to Love Me about Townes Van Sant.
Yeah.
And in the trailer, it's a poignant moment from the film where he goes, and I realized I could do this, but it would take leaving everything behind.
Yeah.
No family.
Yeah.
No money. You know, like, I'm paraphrasing, but... Like, basically, that you get all in.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a tragic figure. And, I think I have, in a lot of ways, like, looked up to that ideal for a long time. And I'm maybe more going towards that Andrew WK thing that we were talking about now. But, I think, you know, it's like your mom told you, you know, nothing worthwhile ever comes easy, you know, and I'm enjoying, you know, but I mean, it's becoming more of a spiritual endeavor for me these days, you know, like I'm trying to think of, you know, I think it's also connected, and I feel like, you know, I mean, the music has to be a part of that, and the approach, and the relationships, and, you know, how do we make it all kind of jive? Man.
Well, it's just like that. I mean, I think that when you work for yourself, you have to do that, and you really have to work it that hard. I don't care what it is. It could be working on Wall Street. There's that great movie about, you know, with Will Smith, where the guy, you know, they live in, you know, he basically lives with his child in, you know, the bathroom.
BART station.
You know, while he's trying to get this cert and get himself on Wall Street as a trader.
Yeah.
Because he knows it'll make things better. There's always a compromise, and I think a lot of people look at that and go, you know, that looks like a lot of work, instead of, like, you know, here's an opportunity.
Yeah.
Here's an opportunity. Like, you know.
You know what I always felt like was a lot of work? Was going in and filling out job applications after I quit some shitty job I hated.
Yes.
Sitting in a cubicle all day.
Oh, God, man. Like, it was a lot of work when I worked in a cubicle to not blow my head off.
Well, you know, and you know, like, for myself, you know, you sit down and you fill out this thing and, you know, this piece of paper, and you suddenly realize that, like, I mean, it makes you look like you're about this big,
yeah,
you know? And, like, you know, you're so much more than what's useful to this company.
Oh, God, yeah. It's like, you know, like you go to your job interview at Chili's and they're like, why do you want to work at Chili's? Like, what the do you think, man? Because I need money.
Up there's my landlord keeps calling me.
Because the worst thing for me was coming out and just needing a job to survive and being told that you're overqualified.
Right.
It's like,
I've never been told that.
I've never been told that either.
What does that mean? What do you mean I'm overqualified to do what?
I've heard. What are you kidding me? More than that.
Yeah. You know, it's just like. You know, I mean, it's just the big thing is that some people, you know, they need that sort of like they need some, like, not to be the boss of themselves. You know, they work a lot better with a schedule. It's really hard, you know, particularly you were talking about being a creative person. The worst thing about being a creative person is when you have nothing to do, because I get hugely anxious, you know, and so that leads to self-medication of some sort.
Right.
The healthiest self-medication is doing something, you know.
Right.
That's what you have to do. And not everybody is willing to take that kind of accountability for what you do and who you are and where you're going to get your money and stuff like that. It's a lot easier. Yeah, it's certainly easier to go here and then go, today, here's your schedule.
Yeah.
Whereas you.
But I would argue it's not easier.
Oh, no.
I feel like spiritually, it's draining.
Well, yeah. It's, you know?
We're here so short.
Some of us shorter than others.
I think that for you, for me, for other people, we look at it like that. And it's like, for me, like, I mean, it would, it's, it, it would kill me. It would absolutely kill me to go back to work for corporate America in any way, shape, or form.
You talk about finding that balance and not going, 90 miles an hour anymore, specific to your son. He's 4.
Mm-hmm.
How did your creative process change 4 years ago when he was born?
My creative process has changed to vastly less time for it.
Yeah.
I would say one thing I'm working on right now is having more creative time. I feel like I went over a year without writing a song from the time I finished Patsy to when I completed touring it. Because it was I wrote the album and then we began practicing it, refining it, recording it, preparing to promote it, practice it more, booking tours, touring it. And
now, is that all in-house? Are you utilizing management, outside resources, or is it all you?
There's a hodgepodge of things, but I would say, we're vastly independent, But it's not like some artistic choice. I would love the right people involved. That's one of the things that we're hoping to accomplish with the New York thing is to connect with these
line
type
yourself
of people.
Up with somebody who sees your vision.
Yeah, I mean, management would be great.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm unmanageable.
Well, you probably figure this out. That comes with its own problems.
Yeah.
You know, I still feel even people that, oh gosh, man, just look at how many artists have sued Sony or their managers, or how many people have had their, how many people have Billy Joel's experience.
Oh, God, yeah. Lots of people.
Gosh, man, everybody from Ted Nugent to Peter Frampton to Billy Joel, they've all been ripped off.
Yeah, oh, God, man, I've been watching these Netflix music documentaries. Nina Simone, Harry Nilsson, Levon Helm.
Levon Helm.
So many of these people that you would think, no way, they're facing destitute.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I just got shit, Harry.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
That Nelson one is great, man.
Oh, God, dude.
That's
a couple weeks ago, I was just on the, I can't live it is without you.
And just recently, something was in the news just recently, Keisha.
Yeah.
She is locked in a contract with somebody who's just going to ruin her career.
Oh, God, the one woman who got raped.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, well, not only that, but he's going to ruin her career.
Yeah.
And she can't get out of it.
She can't get out of it.
That's real crazy.
You She can't get off the sill. I really think that Ani DeFranco and Todd Snyder and some guys, like, they went, you know what? I can make more money and have more control out of my own life and stuff, doing it in-house, selling records out of my trunk, you know, and be at least in control of it than, like, actually getting, you know, like, you know, that big advance and stuff, which really is, you know, it's like an advance, and you owe them that money.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I saw something once where it said independently selling $5,000 profits the same amount of money that you would make on a major label selling $500,000, because that's like a failure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that brings up, like you said, you know, you're going to New York, and hopefully you could line up with somebody, but you got to have all those stars got to line up for you.
Yeah,
that'd
be right. You know what we need is to, we need our, we need to get on to just a little, you know, I mean, these.
Next step up, man.
Yeah.
You know, next step up.
But like with anything else, each step, like Les was saying, comes with its own challenges.
Yeah, I don't know, you know.
Well, at this level here, are you self-financed as far as your touring and things like that, just from gig to gig?
Mostly. We've had a few people help us out.
Yeah.
Just patrons, kind friends, loving friends. We've done crowdfunding. I mean, I've definitely...
Do you have something active now?
And,
as far as crowdfunding or anything?
I'm going to do one. I've got... I mean... you know, I've chosen to approach these things as let's set the vision on the best thing I can conjure up, and then we'll let's figure out how the money will happen after that. You know.
So what's on your horizon right now in the immediate future few weeks?
Continue talking with you.
With you, that's funny.
Then we're going to set this stage up and play at Main Stage.
Okay. That is exactly what I was expecting. You know, like, I mean, really, really, we had talked earlier. I mean, you're like, you know what? I got to raise this much money, and then I have to release this album. And if I get these two things done this year, I win.
Yeah.
You know, that's I've set out what I've done. You know, and if I get to eat a cheeseburger here and there along the way, you know, I win, you know, which is, I think that pretty much basically that's how it is for any independent businessman, you know, that's how it is.
You know,
the thing that's interesting to me, right, is like about the model for the bands I see touring now, you know, is that they're never, you know, like if you're self-financed, it's always on a shoestring unless, you know, you're somebody.
Yeah,
And I thought that, well, back when I was doing Sound at Sundances, man, I would watch these bands, and I'm like, you guys would come on, I'm like, how do these guys live? You know, because gas was expensive, living was expensive. You know, like we used to feed bands, man. They'd come in and we'd feed them.
Oh God, believe me,
we'd feed them, and like, it would be like taking in refugees from Syria. They're all like, thank you.
I remember the last tour we did. There's this excruciating drive from Albuquerque to Tulsa that we commonly do.
Oh, man, that's a tough one.
And it's a good 10-hour day, right? And then we pull in and we play this kind of half-ass show at a bar venue. And, you know, it's just money's always tight.
Yeah.
And the guy across the street from the bar had an Italian restaurant. And... he came over with these bags of big, I don't know what they're called, manicottis or something like that. These big shell things stuffed with cheese.
Stuffed shells.
And he's like, I forgot silverware. We were just like, thank you. I'm literally out front of this place with one of these. I'm like, it's all over my face and my hands and the sauce. And I'm like, you know, like, I'm 35 years old. You know?
Well, you know, the thing is that you can find, when I went to Portland last time, you know, like the guy there, man, he wouldn't let us leave. Like, he loaded up my truck with, like, bottled water and snacks. And, I mean...
Yeah, there's a lot of beautiful people out there.
You know. On your last tour promoting Patsy, what is there any specific gig, not necessarily biggest or best paid, just is there any specific gig that really stands out as a memorable night? Good or bad? I've talked to a lot of comics
that won't
on
get anybody
show.
that won't get anybody thrown in jail.
I've talked to a lot of comics on this show, and that usually that question usually brings out some.
Yeah,
some,
I love stand-ups.
Some horror gigs.
I'm really studying them right now. I do come back to the New York thing, and that's why we're doing that this year. We're gonna go spend a month out there.
Oh,
and,
nice.
There's just something special about that place.
Well, they like you there. You know, I mean, have to go. That's the other thing about leaving is that, like, you might not be. J.D. Simo, you know, can't get a gig in Phoenix, right? Plays festivals every place else.
Weird.
It's like that, you know, and I think that, like, I cannot tell you how many guys I've said, look, you're doing good work here, man. It's just not, this is not your place.
Yeah, I had that experience today.
Yeah.
Actually.
Oh, really? Oh, no.
Yeah. We were playing this thing in Scottsdale festival on the waterfront. It was a nice thing. It was a really nice day. It was an outdoor thing, but, like, you know, it's the middle of the day and we play kind of heavy music. Yeah. Not like heavy, like, but like, it's like heavy.
Soulful heavy.
And it's like the middle of the afternoon and there's like these you know.
Not
I
your crowd.
They were Republicans.
They want to hear Mustang Sally. Yeah.
I don't know what. No, I think that, I don't know what. They probably want to listen to smooth jazz.
Well, they probably want to listen to, like, you know, I don't know. It, like, it's Scottsdale, you know, like, I mean, you know, dude, like, you know, that you're not going to do well there. I think, like, one of the bravest things I've seen any act do in the last couple of years is Steve Earle deliberately went to Scottsdale and, like, you know, did his, I guess, or, oh, we get to
no, that's good. I think it's better that way. Yeah,
but he deliberately went to Scottsdale and did his thing and he got a crowd, you know, he got some people, but not everybody, you know. So,
well, we're coming up close. Okay. I don't want to take you too much. Real quick, one of the things that I've tried to do in the year or so that I've been doing this podcast is highlight local music, local entertainers, local venues, and that's really what we're trying to encourage folks to, to do. Go out there and experience the talent that's out there and support the artists and the venues that support them.
Right.
Run through. We know your level of music. I'm hoping, if it's okay, I probably should ask you beforehand. I'd like to do intro and outro with something off of Patsy.
Yeah, great.
Okay?
Yeah. Thank you.
Who around here do you like listening to? We talked about comics. Who, you know, there's comics that everybody's got to sit there and watch when they're on the bill. Even the other comics will sit there. Are there? Who are the musicians around here that folks should get out and experience?
You know, I'd have to be honest. I don't know a lot of them.
You're on the road too much.
Well, no, I wish I could see more shows. And this isn't an evasive answer, because I love P.K. Gregory.
Yes.
I've got a, oh gosh, one of my buddies from Phoenix lives in Cottonwood, and he had a great band called Mergent. He'll be here tonight, but his name's Adam Bruce. If you ever see Adam Bruce playing at one of the wineries, Page Spring Cellars or something, go watch him. He's a beautiful songwriter, beautiful human. Jake Payne is a friend of mine in Sedona. I don't get to see a lot of music because I'm either gigging or I'm, like, trying to catch a nap and hang out in the sun.
From last night.
You know, the best thing about being where I am now, like, in my, you know, like, the, just where I am in life, is that I can do that. And you never get, and like, I started working a little more last year, and I didn't get to come over here, and I didn't get to see PK, and I didn't get to see you.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, like, I sort of lost track of everybody. Because we were all working at the same time. So, I would have to, like, make special trips. Yeah, this person's going to be here. I'm not going to work that night. You know, go see them. It's hard.
I'd like to get out to more shows.
But when would you sleep?
Well, when would I? Yeah, I'm not going to get paid if
When would you get
paid? I've been fortunate this last year. Lately, I've been getting to sometimes get to open for the bands that I love down in Phoenix. So it's like, this is the one way I can catch this show.
Well,
I get the
name a couple. Who were some of the ones?
Well, there's two of my biggest influences. So they're both on the same label called Fat Possum out of, I think they're out of Louisiana.
Yeah.
They were an old blues label, but now they have some really intense songwriters. There's a guy, A.A. Bondi. We played with, and there's a guy named Dax Riggs.
Yeah, good stuff.
Two of my absolute favorites, Dax Riggs and A.A. Bondi, and we got to play with both of them in the last last year. There's a guy, Damian Jurado, coming down to Phoenix that we're hoping to jump on that bill. You know, a lot of my favorite songwriters are dead.
Yeah. I don't know how that feels at all, dude.
Yeah, right. But yeah.
Some of the, look, obviously the main stage, this is a staple spot for you.
Yeah, main stage is great.
This was like a goodness. Yeah. This place popping up. Yeah. I was like, so
I'm so glad, you know, I'm so glad we've made it.
Yeah.
Hold on. Amber, will you put on your phone Angel Olsen's album so it's not quiet? Please, thank you. Can you bring me my phone, too?
And bring...
I just don't want it to be quiet.
She's working on it.
Ah.
Main stage, you know, we had these ambitious visions at first. Not that we're not ambitious now. I mean, you know, Rebecca is, you know, the full driving force. Christopher Robin as well, you know, like, and I'm a little bit more in the back on the driving, you know.
Yeah.
I love that I've been here since before it opened, and you know, it's been a real process in learning, like, about it's not what you want, it's what people want.
Yeah.
You know,
you have to make money. Yeah, you have to make money, you know, and so.
But I feel like we've got to this point. Yeah, I remember when it first opened, coming into shows, and it felt like a lovely place it is. It felt like a B movie set for, okay, this is like some sound studio, and this is what we think a music venue looks like. But now it's been lived in and partied in and rock and rolled and danced. There's
been sweat on the floor.
Yeah.
You know, blood on the chair.
Blood on the stage.
From Les's arm.
Yeah. So now it feels lived in.
Gotcha.
Well, what's better is that it's still open. You know?
I'm so glad. That was my ultimate point. I'm so grateful that it's open.
I put some time into this place.
Oh, yeah.
To, like, sweat. I mean, like, but the thing was that we needed, I thought, and I still do think, is that, like, in order for things to progress, for people, you know, this place has to stay open, and you have to have this. And so the compromises that you make to keep things open, you know, are what you have to do.
You know?
And
we're getting there.
I'm looking to come back. This is my first trip over here.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, I've never been in this
building.
Yeah,
I've been trying to get him over here for,
we
like,
had Al Fowl,
you know,
here
forever.
Recently. Yep. I love Al Fowl. Have you seen him?
No.
Oh,
no.
God. You know Al, right?
Yes, I do.
You've run sound for him.
Yes,
we opened for him once at Sundance's when you were running sound.
Yes, that's true.
God, he's so good.
Yep.
Al Fowl, if they ever made a movie about Joaquin Phoenix playing Johnny Cash, Al Fowl could play Joaquin Phoenix playing Johnny Cash.
Pretty much.
So who's going to play you in the Decker movie? The Decker biography that's coming out at one point in the future. Who could you see in your shoes?
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
We don't have. He doesn't have a big round basketball head. I think makeup, dude.
We
I think Justin Timberlake.
Nice.
I don't know.
No. I don't know if.
Before this gets off, man, I need to plug this. Like, now, your last album here, like Patsy, which I'm finally getting my vinyl copy.
I have
of.
The CD.
Yeah. They
Thank
still
you,
have
by the way. You gave me
several,
that over Brick and Bones a number of months ago.
They still have several vinyl copies left. I highly recommend getting one.
Yeah, there's probably 30 left.
There's 30
so
left, you know.
Where can folks get you? I got Decker Music, Instagram, and Twitter.
Yeah, Decker Music's Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. I mean, we're on iTunes, Spotify, Pandora.
Website?
YouTube. DeckerMusic.org.
.org.
I'm fond of saying, because we're a nonprofit.
I think most musicians are. Well, hey, I want to let you go. You got a show to get to here, and I appreciate you sitting down
Thanks
with us.
Thanks so
for
much.
Minutes.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was a fun chat.
Yeah, that was good.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, I haven't seen you in forever. This is awesome.
Well, I hope you enjoy.
All right. Hey, thanks.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Now we can watch Les eat. I still want the. I want the.
I can't see what happened. I must, like, I because of the wood stove, I get in a hurry, right? I'm like, I'll get burned.
But dirty chips.
So I get these burns, and like, you know, they're like, it's
so if you got something to say, why don't you take it to the grave? Well, it's too closely, but mostly don't speak. I've toiled and I've tumbled, I told tales to the meek. Well, I've crumbled and I've crawled on the dark end of the street. And I swore a solemn oath to both the devils and the saints. So if you got something to say, why don't you say it with some grace? Bandage what bleeds, ramble and gamble and scramble if you please. They see the road to hell is paved with plenty of these, but then they get on their knees for pray to a priest. So if you got something to say, I guess someone is always listening. So if you got something to say, why don't you?